Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Make sure to check us out on our Facebook pages, REP Paranormal and Friends and REP Paranormal Busters, for up-to-date show information and events. Hello everyone, welcome to REP Paranormal and Friends. Have a special guest for you. She's an author, a poet, with an MA in guidance and counseling, also a pre-writer, hypnotherapy, and psychotherapy. Please welcome Iona Jenkins to the show.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Alison.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Well, it's a really nice sunny spring day here in South Wales. You know, considering the weather's been so terrible, it's really brilliant. Spring tomorrow.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, it's actually pretty cold here for spring, and we actually just had some more snow the other day, so I'm ready for a warm-up.
Yeah, it's the first day of spring, the equinox tomorrow, so
yes.
This bodes well.
All right, Iona. So why don't you give us a little bit of background on yourself? You were a French teacher, right, in Yorkshire for a few years. How did you get into psychotherapy and clinical hypnotherapy?
Well, I moved to London from Yorkshire after a marriage breakup. I had a few difficult years after that, and I had a clairvoyant friend who said to me, "Do you know, if you don't sell this house and move, nothing will change. Nothing new will happen."
Mm-hmm.
So I put the house on the market. I applied to a private schools agency. Now, I hadn't been working in private schools. I'd been working in state comprehensives. But I thought, well, this might be an easy way of doing it because they'll give me accommodation if I can get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got an interview and they said to me, "Where do you want to teach?" And I said, "Well, I'm not really bothered. You know, I'll accept anything so long as it's not Yorkshire. I want a complete change." The next thing, I found myself in London. So I carried on being a housemistress and teaching some French there for a while. Then eventually I met my second husband, who is Welsh.
Yeah.
And then I went back into state schools for a while, where I did a lot of mentoring of trainee teachers and also students.
Mm-hmm.
So I did an MA along with that in my spare time, going to Brunel University in the evenings, like it was called an in-service degree, because you did your research actually in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got into it. I became, you know, so into the therapeutic content, I thought, well, yeah, I'd like to do this all the time. And then I was upstairs checking on a trainee teacher,
mm-hmm.
and this little boy, or I say little boy, he was 13, came running out of the class, really angry. Slammed the door behind him, and there were some benches in the corridor. I said, "Sit down there, I think we have to talk." And I asked him why he was causing the problem.
Uh-huh.
And he just said, "I get so angry." And that's where it started. I thought, well, I can deal with this. You know, I would love to work more with all this stuff, so mm-hmm. why don't I actually train? Because teaching French was like prescriptive. It was always the same year after year with the different groups. It was the same textbooks going through the same stuff. And I was ready for that big change.
Mm-hmm.
I changed. I'd already moved to London. I'd got married again. And I wanted a change of career.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in my 40s at the time, so or late 40s. So finished my MA, did some more training, and then moved into private practice and working with adolescents in schools as a counsellor. And people in a community trust with multi-ethnic background, working with refugees. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. Suddenly it was there, and I did that until we retired down to Wales. And the reason we left London was because my husband had lost his business and he was unwell.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided it was time to sell up and go, because London was so expensive. And we thought if we could sell the house and moved, we could actually take our pensions and, mm-hmm. and see what we were going to do next.
Right.
And that's, I'd been writing poems for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and then suddenly I thought, right, I'm going to do this all the time. I'm going to make a third career here.
Yes,
because I didn't have the space I had in London to do private practice, and no one was going to employ me in my 60s. So I thought, well, let's do something different. So I became a writer. I took my poetry and started to do well with it, and then I thought, well, I'll see if I can write spiritual books, because I've always wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've read a lot of them, and I wanted to do it, and I just let my experience flow into it.
Is this kind of what led up to your book, To Sing with Bards and Angels?
That started in London, funnily enough.
Okay.
I had Italian neighbours who were there for 3 years on a contract.
Uh-huh.
And then they went back to Rome, and they invited us over. So I spent the day. I spent a day there in Rome, looking around at the art, which is on every street corner. And then I went round the Vatican. Now, I have an Irish Catholic background, you know, through my father. And it's the last place I would have normally wanted to go. But, you know, I thought, well, there's history in here. I'm going to go look at it. And I'm walking around the Sistine Chapel. And there, the ceiling that Michelangelo painted,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting something else other than the usual Catholic stuff from this ceiling. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm getting a different feeling from it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like picking up the soul of the artist. You know, it's like he'd sold it somehow. And there was also a statue down in the main basilica of St. Peter's called La Pietà that he'd carved. And I was standing there sort of looking at this incredible carving where everything was so well done. You know, you could see the muscles, the bones, the sinews, the pain on the Christ's face, and the compassion on the mother who was holding him, and a strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is different. This is a feminine side of this now. And I'd seen that in the Pope's own chapel, you know, where an mm-hmm. all-male conclave of cardinals sit.
Yeah.
And it's right at the heart of the power of the Catholic Church. So it started with that. Then I went back to my Italian friends, and I sat outside in the afternoon sun. It was a time when the kiwi fruits were all ripened and mm-hmm. the lemons were falling over the garden fences from the little trees. And mountains behind me, and I just suddenly thought, this is incredible. This is nature, but it's the same feeling as I had with that art.
Mm-hmm.
And he was named after the Archangel Michael, of course. And it all seemed to start mixing together.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, all this inspiration from nature and from the art, it's the language of angels.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a poem called The Language of Angels, which was the beginning of writing this book, To Sing with Bards and Angels.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't actually write the book until we moved to Wales. And then the angels came in again. The bards were already there from looking at Druidry, which is a Celtic
mm-hmm.
thing,
mm-hmm.
Although it's spread over the world now in its modern form.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd done some Druid courses, some correspondence Druid courses. And I thought, you know, the bards, poets, storytellers, keeping things alive, lifting people's spirits, sitting around the campfire, fantastic atmosphere. Maybe I could do that with a book. I was starting to think that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the angel happened when I was sitting in my lounge. Now, I live in a two-bed flat, you know. It's not massive, but it's got mm-hmm. reasonable-sized rooms.
Right.
And the patio door that goes out onto a small balcony gives me a fantastic view right over the sea.
Oh, wow.
And I'm looking at the sea, and the moon comes out absolutely full above the clouds. First of all, we get a gold path. Then the path turns silver. Then it widens. And I'm meditating on the moon and this path. And suddenly I get the impression, it's in my mind's eye, but then I am quite sensitive and psychic. So it's going on in my mind's eye. And I'm thinking, this is an angel, and it's tall, and it's bright, and it's got pale rainbows around it. Much like moonlight, really. It seemed to be made of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, it's standing on that silver path. It was almost like what was in was out. They're both part of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was standing there, and it was inside as well. So I decided it was an angel, though I give people reading my book license all the time to use their own images, because some people don't want to talk in terms of angels. They'd rather talk in terms of bright beings or spirit guides or even fairy. You know, that's up to them. I think when people are being creative, they get their own images and they should use them. This is just a signpost, because it's my experience. Other people will be coloured differently according to their culture, their background, etc., you know, their own beliefs.
Right.
Which is fine. And I encourage people to do that all the time. So then I think, well, what's all this about? So I ask a question. And it's almost like the answer drops into my head. And so I start to think, is this channeling? Am I channeling this? Is this my higher self, or is this another being? Does it matter, really? As long as the answers make sense.
Correct, yeah.
So I start to write a conversation, I ask a question, get an answer, do it again until I've got a couple of sides of A4. And there it is, there's a conversation with an angel. And I put five of those in the book. Now, he tells me he's creative wisdom. That if I'm going to create, I have to create with wisdom from the heart. The path is through the heart, the creative heart. Because if you don't create with wisdom and you don't create with love in the heart, then you're unlikely to create something that's not useful or life-enhancing. But actually doing that way, following that advice, I create something life-enhancing, which I hope to sing with bards and angels is. And I hope it, you know, encourages a few people to be creative in their own way and sing the song of their own souls, just like Michelangelo did in that Sistine Chapel. But, you know, don't have to be a great artist, a great master. You just have to do what comes through.
Right.
Because sometimes it's incredible. I can't paint, but I like painting because I like using colour. I painted a picture of a lion on a beach in the sunlight, you know, with lots of little flowers on the sea. And I stuck it on a wall. And someone came round to my house, and I didn't know this person. And she said, "I really love that picture. Can I buy it?"
Oh, wow.
And I said, "Well, you know, it's just a doodle, really. I can't think of any amount of money to sell it to you for, because it was just a way of passing an afternoon. You know, and I like playing with the colour." And it was like she had got something from that, even though it was the most naive, simple thing. So who can say what you create is going to do, even if it's very simple, who can say where that's going? Somebody comes along and that speaks to them.
Right, yes.
So Michelangelo speaks to us down the centuries in amazing art. But that little lion spoke to one person.
Right, exactly.
And that actually, if that person got something from that and found a way to, you know, to use that joy from that picture in her life, then, you know, that's a good purpose to have, and we can all do that. We can paint, we can dance, we can act. We can even create a system. You know, if people are into science, they can create things from that. If it's coming from the heart, they're not going to create nuclear weapons.
Right, yeah, exactly.
It's just, you know, it's just that way of looking at it, looking at it from the angel's wisdom point of view, and writing that down. Sometimes if I don't know an answer, I'll just ask this angel who I call Astariel, and I didn't find out the name until I was right to the second to the last chapter. And I actually ask, you know, what shall I do about this? And sometimes the answer just drops in, and sometimes it drops in within that day sometime. Or sometimes if I go and lean against a tree, I'll get it. You know, because I think the world speaks to us.
Right.
And if the world's speaking through the heart, we're not going to mess things up. We can enhance each other's lives. We can, by singing the song of our souls, which is a true song, we can find answers to what's going on, and put as much positive stuff out as we can into this very troubled world that
we're in. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. This was a really good book, and it's a very positive book, and I really thoroughly enjoyed reading it. Now, your book, you were kind of using the voice of a druid, correct? Can you explain how a voice can, like, inspire someone? How does that?
Yeah, I use a descriptive voice. Now, that didn't actually come from thinking about it. It just arrived, you know, it just kind of developed. And I've used that voice actually speaking in workshops. I used to sing a lot in my younger days, and I've been in amateur rock bands, operatic societies, concert parties, and it's my singing voice transferred to writing. So that it is my voice, but it's in words on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And people are inspired by songs, and I think people can be inspired by a writer's voice,
mm-hmm.
if it speaks to the heart.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I think so too. Just like, yeah, you know, people get inspired by listening to different songs, music,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. And I think that can also, different types of music can also change your mood into different types. So I could see that with writing as well, somebody reading a book and being inspired by them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in your book, you also talk about labyrinths. Do you want to kind of talk about that, elaborate on that and what that was like?
Yeah, I came across the labyrinths one day with the Christians for some reason. You know, that the Christian spiritual place in London was actually putting on one-day course on labyrinth walking.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at it and I thought, that really appeals to me, and I've no idea why, so I'm gonna go along to it. It wasn't a particularly expensive workshop, and I thought, well, that might be a day well spent, so I'll go and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the labyrinth pattern is like something you find in nature all the time. You know, it's like a path to a centre, a circular path going to a centre. See it in spider's webs and shells. And you can see it in a lot of ancient art. And basket weaving, all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, something to do with the sacred geometry, and I can't work that out, but I'm going to give it a try. Now, some people use portable labyrinths, but there is one in the pavement, right in the city of London, right near the banks.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Right near Lombard Street, where all the banks are.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
I've been and walked that one, and I found a really nice one behind a convent in West London, you know, in, mm-hmm. near Richmond-on-Thames.
Mm-hmm.
I found a really good one there. And labyrinths are sort of, you can have three-circuit labyrinths, but that's not big enough for me. So five-circuit for a portable one that I did use for a while. Seven circuits outside is brilliant. The one in the Chartres Cathedral is 11 circuits.
Oh, wow.
But that's not a traditional labyrinth. That's,
uh-huh.
That's a later version, medieval version. And so you decide what you're going to do. You can walk to the centre. It's like walking to the centre of yourself. It's one path that goes into the centre,
mm-hmm.
and the same path leads you back out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can use it for different things. If you want to create a project, you can actually put that in your mind before you actually walk into the labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
Spend some time at the centre. When you're in the centre, you're in the centre of yourself. If you're not a Christian, you're in the centre of yourself, the centre of nature, if you like. You can sit there and wait for the answers to come. They may not come immediately. When you walk out, it's like you're releasing the stuff that's in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And I would often get things straight away after I'd practiced walking for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it can come a week later, 2 weeks later. But usually you do get an answer somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You can go in for healing. You know, if you're not well, you can ask for healing. You can walk in asking, you know, if you can have this healing in the centre, trying to find the healing centre of the universe inside yourself, coming out again,
mm-hmm.
Trying to release what's in the way. You can use it for prayer. Some people just pray all the way round.
Mm-hmm.
And Christians will stand with Christ in the middle, the Buddhists might sit with the Buddha in the middle. It meets you where you are, basically. You know, anybody can use one.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't think we know what the traditional labyrinth was actually used for because it's thousands of years old. But,
right.
But it's been picked up again in modern times, just like Druid has evolved,
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know, whatever meanings we need for today.
Exactly. Now, did I read that you actually, did you visit one in Arizona? Did I read that?
I did go to Arizona.
Okay. Do you want to elaborate? How was your trip to Arizona? What did you experience there?
I really loved Arizona. You know, I'm used to this green land, which is wet and cool.
Well, uh-huh.
And Arizona is completely the opposite. It's like it's red and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to carry water around with you everywhere on a strap that you get from a petrol station.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You carry that to make sure you don't get dehydrated.
Mm-hmm.
And factor 50 sun cream if you're going to be wearing a t-shirt.
Right, yes.
So it was August and I got into the whole flash floods every now and again.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, that's when school holidays were, so that's when I went.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite an incredible experience walking in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
But it's where I learned to started to learn to use my senses more.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was such a new sensory experience. You know, breathing this hot air instead of the cool, damp air we're so used to.
Yeah, yes.
You know, the earth was cracked and dry, and yet there were creatures, and creatures like I'd never seen. And people told me rattlesnakes were all asleep in August anyway, but if you stayed on the trails, you'd be okay. You know, and if you took all the precautions, it would be okay. I loved Arizona. I absolutely loved it. And then we moved from Tucson, and we moved up north to Sedona.
Yes, Sedona, yes.
And that's where, under the red rocks, I actually saw an image in my mind's eye of Celtic knotwork all over the rocks. And I thought, it's like two old civilizations speaking to me. Celtic knotwork comes from my own history there. And maybe I should look at that more when I go home. Maybe the rock is telling me that. Just everything on the earth to me is linked.
Right.
You know, that, I can go back to Arizona by just bringing up the images in my mind. It's almost like I can still learn from it, even though I'm not there anymore. And then onwards, we moved up to through Flagstaff onto the famous Route 66.
Oh, yes.
And, I went to the Grand Canyon. I'm looking for the Grand Canyon. We got out of the car. I stood by a wall, looked over the wall, and went, "Whoa, there it is!" And it was like a painting, and it just changed. The colours changed, the shapes changed as the clouds moved along. It's just like this vista was like a kaleidoscope, just changing all the time. It was quite incredible. It's a bit like, you know, so energetic.
Yes. I have visited the Grand Canyon, but I went in November, so it was a bit breezy and cold up there at that time. But it was just, I could not believe it. Like, you literally are looking over this big, like, crater thing in there, and there's people, like, walking out onto these little ledges on that, and I was like, oh my goodness. But it was absolutely breathtaking to see, though.
I know, I wouldn't have missed that for the world. I'm so glad I've seen that.
Yes, yes, very much so. Now, do you have any plans for any other books in the future? Or
I'm in the process of writing a follow-up to it, which has 12 angel conversations.
Oh, okay.
And around that, there are stories and reflections again. And maybe I'll put some photographs in it this time.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, I do have some plans. How that will work out, I don't know. No. Sometimes it's quite playful, you know, you go along this certain way, and then you have to shelve it for a while and go on to a different project and then go back to it later.
Right, yes, yes. I'm sure it can take some time to write a book.
Well, it took me quite a lot of years from, you know, from visiting the Sistine Chapel to actually finishing this book.
Right.
It probably must have been about at least maybe 10 years.
Oh, wow.
You know, with all the things that happened in between. But it's almost like these things are filed, you know? And then they jump out at you, and you think, oh, that connects to that. Let's put the two together. You know, somehow they overlap, and the thing is born. It was almost like it was conceived in Rome, and then the moon goddess gave it birth.
Right.
Through the angel wisdom outside my apartment.
Now, where can people purchase your book, To Sing With Bards and Angels?
Well, all the usual places, really. You can purchase it on Amazon, from Barnes & Noble. For e-books, you can also get it on Apple, Kobo. Any bookshop should be able to order it. And johnhuntpublishers.com can buy it directly from them. And they do have a US distribution.
Okay, perfect.
You know, so some people want bookshops, and other people just want the convenience of Amazon.
Right.
So it's kind of up to them. And I have a website with this sort of things, which is www.ionajenkins.com.
I was just going to ask if you had a website too. Now, do you have any social media? So if anybody wants to follow you?
That's listed on my website, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter.
Okay, perfect. All right. I can get that in there. All right. I just like to always make sure our listeners, if they have any follow-up questions or anything like that, they're able to...
Yeah, that's fine. I am a messenger.
Okay, perfect. that's awesome. Well, I'd like to thank you for joining me today, taking time out. It was a pleasure talking to you. Like I said, I really, truly enjoyed your book. It's very inspirational, and I hope everyone else enjoys it as much as I did. And thank you, Iona, for being on.
Thank you, Alison. I really enjoyed talking to you. It's been a pleasure, too.
Yes.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.